Good evening. I'm Kimberly Wyckoff, the Executive Director of the San Francisco Education Fund, one of the co-sponsors of tonight's events. I would like to welcome you all to the African American Arts and Cultural Complex and give a special thanks for everyone who came out tonight despite the Giants playing. It is 2-2. We'll try to give updates as the score changes. We'll let you know. But I also want to give a special thanks to our candidates. They're putting themselves in the public eye for the past several months and devoting significant time and energy and foregone Giants games watching in order to do this often thankless job that is so critical to the future of our city, our schools, and our students. So thank you all for making the time to be here and for putting your energy behind this really important race. I also want to thank the co-sponsors for the candidate forum tonight, the 2nd District PTA, Parents for Public Schools, the San Francisco Parental Political Action Committee, support for families of children with disabilities, and our organization, the Education Fund. A few quick logistics before I introduce our moderator. Interpretation services are available in Spanish and Cantonese. For Spanish, please see Oscar. Oscar, raise your hand, and he will have headphones for you. And for Cantonese, please see Ken, and we also have headphones there. Childcare is available in the room adjacent to this hall, and the bathrooms are located in the hallway on this floor. The event will be recorded by KALW and made available after the forum, so you can listen again if you want to hear the questions or think more about it, and please pass it on to your friends who couldn't make it tonight so they can hear the perspectives and answers of our candidates in this important race. I'd now like to introduce our moderator for the evening, Jill Tucker. Jill has been writing about education for over 17 years, currently for the San Francisco Chronicle and previously for the Oakland Tribune. She has received national and state awards for her work and is a frequent television and radio guest on KQED's newsroom and forum. Her professional expertise includes education policy and finance, some knowledge of the rules of tetherball, and a good grasp of when somebody might actually need to solve for X. A Bay Area native, Tucker earned a master's degree in journalism at the University of Colorado Boulder, a bachelor's degree from UC Santa Barbara, and in between she spent 2 years in the Peace Corps teaching English in Cape Verde, West Africa. She lives in Oakland with her photojournalist husband and 12-year-old son. We're thrilled to have Jill here to moderate the event. I'm going to turn it over to Jill.
I'm so happy to see everyone here tonight. I am a huge Giants fan as well, and Trevor and I are going to be keeping tabs, and I will give you the score as we go along. I am thrilled to moderate this debate. I love the format that we have tonight. I think it is diverse and interesting with lots of questions, lots of different questions for the candidates. You'll get a really wide array of perspectives on a long list of topics, which I think is wonderful. I do not anticipate that any of this will be boring, and so thank you all for coming. Go Giants.
Yes, yes.
All right, so I am going to start with the ground rules in the agenda for the evening. All nine candidates were invited, and we have seven here tonight, or seven will be here. Emily Morase will be arriving a few minutes late. She had a work commitment, but she will be joining us. Seating arrangement was decided by lottery before the forum began. And audience were given note cards as you came in. You should have note cards available to write down questions. And we'll be taking those note cards. If you have one, you can raise your hand and pass it down the aisle to folks who will be collecting them. Here's Miranda. She's going to be collecting, and Lorraine, right? Lorraine, are you collecting? Yes, okay. Let's go, Lorraine. Wake up. All right. So they'll be picked up throughout the night, so you don't have to write them right now. When questions come to you, you can certainly write those down and raise your hand, and we'll pick those up. Responses from the candidates will be timed. Candidates, you will be timed. And signs will be held up to signal speakers of your remaining time. Green means go. Yellow means you have, there was a green, you have 30 seconds left, and red means stop. Red means you can finish your sentence, but do not keep going after that, because otherwise I start giving dirty looks and then I get mad. So we do ask that verbal interaction between the audience and the candidates during the forum, that's not going to be permitted, and we ask that you refrain from clapping as well. However, please stay for a few minutes after the forum is over to chat with the candidates if you have individual questions that were not asked tonight. We're going to start with 2-minute opening statements from each candidate. I'm going to introduce them, and then they will each have individually 2 minutes for their opening statement. After that, which I think is really cool, I'll present the candidates with a scenario that they were actually given ahead of time, so they had a little time to think about it, and they will explain how they would handle the situation. Then there will be a question submitted by each sponsoring organization for the evening, and the remainder of time will be questions from the audience. For each question from the sponsoring organizations and the audience, 2 candidates will be chosen to answer each question. So I think that diversifies the number of questions rather than having every candidate answer every question. So I think that makes it a little more entertaining. At the finale of the event, each candidate will have the opportunity for a 30-second closing statement. It's your final thoughts. 30 seconds goes really fast. Sum it up. You guys have any questions?
How are you selecting the randoms? The two candidates that answer the questions?
I'm going to wing it. So I'm going to just select candidates, and each I have a little chart so that everybody gets the same number.
Scientific.
Yep, very scientific. All right. All right, so I'm going to introduce each candidate. You're going to have 2 minutes. We will proceed in the order drawn by candidates before the event. And as a reminder, we have our timekeeper. She's holding the cards. Green sign, you go. We haven't started. You're good. We'll let Dennis get settled, and then we'll begin. So the order for opening statements will go down. I'm going to introduce each person individually, give them 2 minutes, and then we'll move on to the next person. So we're going to start tonight with Trevor McNeil. He is a third-generation teacher and a native San Francisco with experience as a SFUSD substitute and paraprofessional. Aside from full-time teaching, Trevor currently serves on the board of the Inner Sunset Neighborhood Association, the city's Pedestrian Safety Advisory Committee, and the San Francisco Democratic County Central Committee. And Trevor, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you. Thank you for being here tonight. As someone who was Will Clark for at least 3 Halloweens, I really appreciate the sacrifice you were making. Sometimes people refer to me as the teacher candidate because I talk about that a lot. And I do think it is a crucial part of what I bring potentially to the school board and to this race. When you're talking about anyone in politics, but especially school board, there are always things you want to ask. Motivations, qualifications, vision, and relatability. And I think my motivations are clear. I've been a teacher my entire life. Right out of college, I started as a paraprofessional at Leonard Flynn, and I've continued with that path. Being on the Board of Education for me is just a next step of activism, a next step of being able to serve our students. Qualifications, I don't think being a teacher alone qualifies me. I think it does give me a very special frontline perspective, but there are other things I do in my life, from serving on the Pedestrian Safety Advisory Committee to working in my community as a volunteer and political organizer for almost a decade. I really understand how to maintain connections with people, balance sometimes difficult policy, and be held accountable for my decisions. Relatability, no, I do not have kids in the public schools, but I'm recently married and planning on it. And honestly, one of the big reasons I am running is for just selfish reasons. I want to raise my kids in San Francisco public schools, and I hear from my own personal peer group this fear that that's not what this city is for. And as a San Franciscan, that makes me really sad. So my ultimate goal is to make our schools something that, as a city, we are as proud of as we are of everything else in the city, especially our Giants. So thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Trevor. Our next candidate tonight is Shimon Walton. He is currently the executive director of Young Community Developers, Inc., a workforce development organization in the Bayview Hunters Point. He's a former classroom teacher and a candidate for the San Francisco Board of Education, which we see here. He has dedicated his life to connecting young people with opportunities to be successful. Shimon, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Shimon Walton. I'm a candidate for the San Francisco Board of Education because I care. I care about the success of every child in San Francisco, and I know that that vehicle to success is through the San Francisco Unified School District. I'm going to be fighting to decrease the achievement gap that exists for our black families, our Latino families, our children with special needs, our foster care families, making sure that they receive the opportunities to be successful. And the way that we do that is that we make sure that they learn how their academic success today relates to future higher education opportunities, relates to future employment, and working to provide curriculum that does just that. Secondly, I'm going to be fighting to making sure that every neighborhood and every community in San Francisco has quality programs and quality classes so that we can have equitable schools in our entire city. We have some good schools here in San Francisco, but we have a lot of work to do in our disenfranchised and low-income communities. The way we do that is to make sure that we bring some of the same quality programs to these neighborhoods and communities, immersion programs, arts programs, tech opportunities, programs that families and children love and need so that they can thrive and be successful. Third, I'm going to be fighting to make sure that with the passage of Prop 30 and local control funding formula, that those dollars get into the classroom so we can hire more teachers and more paraprofessionals so that we can reduce classroom size and do a better job with special needs and inclusion. I'm also going to be fighting to leverage tech companies and development companies. We have over 1,000 tech companies here in San Francisco, a little over 100 schools. Just imagine the work we can do if one or two tech companies each adopted a school. I'm endorsed by the Teachers Union, San Francisco Democratic Party, 5 school board commissioners, every single supervisor here in San Francisco, because that's a testament to the fact that we understand that we need to work together to get things done in our schools. We won't always agree, but we will work hard to do things. Thank you.
Thank you, Shimon. Next, a San Francisco teacher, Dennis Yang, is a native San Franciscan and a proud product of San Francisco public schools. He went to UC Berkeley and San Francisco State University for his bachelor's and master's degrees. Dennis's teaching career began at his alma mater, Lowell High School, in 2000. He went on to teach at the Urban School of San Francisco. Currently, he is teaching at the Bay School of San Francisco. Dennis, you have 2 minutes.
Okay, thank you. Good evening, everyone. So as Jill said, I am a native San Franciscan, so I'm a very proud product of the San Francisco Unified School District. I went to Spring Valley Elementary, Marina Middle School, and Lowell High School. Both of my parents were teachers here in San Francisco, and they instilled in me a love and passion for teaching and for learning, also education, of course. When I was growing up, after I graduated from Lowell, I went to UC Berkeley, where I thought I would major in political science or history, but I guess my love for the Chinese language prevailed in the end, and so I decided to major in Chinese language and literature. Once I graduated from Berkeley, I thought I wanted to become a lawyer, and I went to law school for 2 weeks. So after 2 weeks, I discovered that law was not the thing for me. No offense to any lawyers in the audience this evening. But I went to SF State to get my master's degree in Chinese, and at the same time, I went back to my alma mater, Lowell, where I was presented the opportunity to teach. And so I taught there for 3 years. So being on the front lines every day, working with parents, with students, with teachers, administrators, so I know exactly what each group needs and what they want, and I know how to work effectively and very harmoniously with them. And I'll take that effectiveness and harmony with me to the Board of Education to work with all the other 6 members to help resolve the problems that we face here in our school district and to help our students reach their full potential. And also, well, one of the things that got me into teaching was also my motto is life influencing life. So not just my life influencing my students, but also my students' lives influencing me as well. And so I didn't just want to affect change within the classroom, but I want to affect change on a larger platform, affecting the lives of all 55,000 of our students here in the school district. And I really hope to improve our schools and to improve our educational system overall. Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis. Next up is Hydra Mendoza. She is a graduate of SFUSD, a parent of two children educated in our public schools, a former preschool teacher, former director of Parents for Public Schools, and the education advisor for Mayors Newsom and Lee. She's a two-term incumbent on the Board of Education and has served as president and vice president. 2 minutes.
Thank you. That actually was my introduction.
Two, 3 minutes.
Yeah. Both my husband and I graduated from San Francisco Unified, him from Lowell and me from Washington. And we have two kids that came through the public school system, Fairmont Elementary School, James Lick Middle School, and both through Lowell High School as well. And in those capacities, I served as a parent volunteer. I was on the school site council. I co-chaired the school site council. I was also the vice president of outreach for the PTA. And we really fought hard to turn a school that nobody wanted to come to into a school that had a very large weight pool by the time we left and graduated. I was a preschool teacher, and that's where it all began. I actually took a couple of classes thinking that I just wanted to learn more about child development because I had this brand new baby. And before I knew it, I captured all 60 credits to go and teach, and I did that for several years. And what 3- and 4-year-olds can teach you is tremendous. I was the director for Parents for Public Schools for 5 years, which allowed me to do a lot of work across the city. And that's where the policy piece actually came from for me, was sitting on councils and sitting on bodies that allowed me as a parent to really capture what was happening on the ground. And articulate that to the school district. So this was well before being anywhere near the school district, but instead just being a partner with them. So being the director of Parents for Public Schools really allowed us to highlight some of the issues that many of our parents were facing. And then as a senior advisor to two mayors, I've been able to bring cities and school districts together, bodies that didn't speak to each other before, bodies that didn't support each other before. And on the 8 years on the Board of Education, during some really, really tough times, I think we've seen some great improvements in our schools. Pre-K, middle school, technology and innovation, college and career, and public-private partnerships are key issues for me, and I look forward to serving another 4 years for you. Thank you.
Thank you, Hydra. Giant score still 2-2. Okay. All right, Mark. Mark Murphy is currently co-chair of the San Francisco Public Education Enrichment Fund, providing oversight on over $50 million of programs and services for SFUSD students. Mark has been advocating for San Francisco youth for over 20 years and is now a candidate for the Board of Education. Mark, your 2 minutes.
Thank you. Good evening, everybody. Again, Mark Murphy and I, as everyone else here, is a candidate for the Board of Education. I'm thrilled to be here with all of you tonight. Again, go Giants. I come to this place, and as I am running for the Board of Education, I say that I am running to serve all of you on our Board of Education because I believe that every child, all of our students, in all of our schools, in all of San Francisco deserve every opportunity for greatness. My passion for education goes back to my childhood. My father, born in 1927, during the heart of the Depression, only finished the 10th grade. Years later, had 5 children of his own, and I don't know where it came from for him, but he instilled the passion in all of us, and I watched him take on not just us 5 in our own family, but children at large in a larger community, and I saw what it was to give back and what it meant for a public education to be successful. I saw what it meant to be engaged in people's lives, in parents' lives, and in children's lives, so that they had every opportunity to be great. As Jill said in my introduction, I started advocating for San Francisco youth and children here 20 years ago in San Francisco. I've been a resident for 24 years. I started just near here in the Western Addition at Third Baptist Church in the basement, tutoring young African-American girls. And 20 years ago, many of you know, bullets were flying at the time, and that was a bad time. But I spent 3 good years working with young women who needed help with science and math, because that's what I wanted to do. My husband, who teaches at Argonne Elementary School for 16 years now, I've been serving at that school in many different communities, understanding what our children need, understanding what our parents need, understanding what school communities need in order to survive, in order to be successful. I served for 5 years on our San Francisco Human Rights LGBT Advisory Committee, and for 5 years with other San Franciscans, we looked at youth issues across the entire city. And during that time as well, worked directly with the school board, passing legislation and resolutions about our LGBTQ students and their health and safety. And finally, I'm going to stop, and we'll talk about lots of great issues tonight. Thank you so much.
Very good. I like that. Hard stop.
I don't want to get on Jill's bad side.
No, don't do that. All right, next up we have Jamie Raffaella Wolf. She's a school administrator and behaviorist working in juvenile mental health and special education here in San Francisco. Her campaign priorities include equitable access for all, focus on special education, nutritional oversight, TLGBTQI safety, green initiatives, and district-wide technological upgrades. Jamie, your 2 minutes.
Thank you all for being here. It was very hard to pull myself away from the game, but this is so worth it. I've really been waiting for this forum. So my name's Jamie. I'm running for the Board of Education. I'm an actual educator running for the Board of Education. I've taught elementary school. I've taught 4th grade, 6th grade, a 3, 4, 5 combined. I've worked in a psychiatric lockdown facility for juveniles here in San Francisco. And I currently work at a non-public school here in San Francisco, working with so-called emotionally disturbed children. Beautiful children who sometimes struggle with expressing themselves appropriately. I came from there earlier today, and I can't wait to get back there tomorrow. It's a job I love. It's a job that I'm passionate about, and a job that I'm fully confident in my competency of. I love it. It's something that I've really tried to align my life's work and my volunteerism with my morality, with my values. And this allows me to continue that. That's why Supervisor David Campos has endorsed my candidacy, because I've actually brought my students to City Hall. It's more than just a passion. It's a way of life. Civic responsibility and engagement and participation is a way of life for me. It's a way of life to educate children. It's really what I believe changes the world. It's really what I believe changes the world. So I go to school every day. I go to work, and I believe that I am changing the world, and that's something that perpetuates my love of my work and why I'm sitting here today. I see so often my children and families being let down by numerous breakdowns within the system. I have shown time and time again that I am competent in navigating the system and bringing together a whole bunch of different agencies to help children, help families. So again, I ask for your vote. You have great people that are running. We will have great service for whoever wins. But really, an educator running for the Board of Education, I have the passion and the skills. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Jamie. Next up is Stevan Cook. He's a third-generation San Franciscan and graduate of SFUSD. A graduate of Williams College, Stevan has dedicated his career to empowering San Francisco students and uplifting communities. He has been chair of the Public Education Enrichment Fund, and later a founding board member of San Francisco Achievers. Stevan, 2 minutes.
thank you. And I first want to say how much of an honor it's been to compete for this office, especially next to the folks that are sitting beside me. It is especially an honor given the way that I grew up in San Francisco. I am a product of a broken home that was broken by drugs and alcohol. I was raised by my grandmother a few blocks from here, and the likelihood that I would have even graduated high school, let alone been a candidate for office in San Francisco, was not in the cards for me. So when I had the opportunity to come back to San Francisco as a graduate from Williams College, I really wanted to play a role in being that network of support that I got coming through schools, and that work has paid incredible dividends throughout the course of my career. Those dividends continue to show up everywhere I go. For example, one of the first students I worked with at Thurgood Marshall is right here on the camera. He's a senior at SF State. When I was thinking about, you know, what I wanted to do to best put myself in a position to serve San Francisco students and families, there was no greater way to do that than pursue a seat on the Board of Education. And the reason that is because the greatest issues that affect achievement are systemic in nature. The fact that we lose 50% of our teachers in the first 5 years, and we lose them at the highest rate at our lowest performing schools. We need to be fixing that. The work that I did on the Public Education Enrichment Fund, ensuring that we have more supports for students in schools, we need to be strengthening that. There are a ton of things that we need to do to leverage the resources that San Francisco has and put those in place to better support our students and families. But the things that I'm looking to do all focus on systemic reform for our students. So I appreciate you being out here. I look forward to speaking to you more, and I'd appreciate your vote this November. Thank you.
Thank you, Stevan. Candidate Lee Su, he wanted to be here, but he is on a fifth grade overnight field trip, and there would have been 150 disappointed kids who wouldn't have been able to go without the chaperone. So we are going to read his bio tonight and understand his priority to be camping out with a bunch of fifth graders, which I don't envy, but that's okay. Lee is a parent of two children in an SFUSD elementary school. After working in law, finance, and technology, Lee is now a computer consultant for third to fifth graders and president of the Greater West Portal Neighborhood Association. He attended public schools and graduated from Yale Law School and Stanford. Dr. Emily Marase will be a little bit late tonight. When she arrives, we will then read her bio and give her also the opportunity for her two-minute opening statement. But in the meantime, we're going to keep going. So each candidate was sent the following scenario yesterday and asked to be prepared to respond how they would handle the situation if it was presented to them as a school board member. They will each have 3 minutes to respond, and the order chosen at random will be starting with Hydra Mendoza. This is a two-part question. A group of parents has come to a board meeting with strong concerns about changes to a district-wide policy and are worried that their students' needs are not being met. They say that they did not even know these changes were happening until they saw the policy being implemented at their school. One, what steps would you take in response to these parents' concerns? And two, what change at the district level do you think needs to happen so that parents and caregivers don't feel out of the loop when important decisions are made? As a school board member, what would you do to shift the culture of communication at the district level? And what is your role in effective communication policies, and how do you make sure families are both informed and listened to? And as somebody who goes to many board meetings, this is not an unlikely scenario. So, Hydra, as you know, it is not an unlikely scenario. You have 3 minutes.
Great, thank you. So, this is not an unlikely scenario, and I want to acknowledge that. I think as board members, we're policymakers, and the implementation piece of it is what we leave to our staff. And so I wanted to start by saying that's part of what needs to get changed, is that we as board members need to be a lot more engaged in how many of our policies are rolled out. So when I think about how I work with parents and how I've worked with parents in the past, oftentimes what the scenario that plays out is parents will come to the board meeting, we'll hear an hour of public comment about what we did wrong. And what I'd like to be able to see and what we've been able to do more recently is to spend a little bit more time during the rollout talking to parents and understanding what the concerns are and what the needs are, particularly the communities that would be impacted by whatever policy this is. You know, when I first started to become engaged with the school district many years ago, it was under Superintendent Ackerman, and I was actually brought on to be one of her parent advisors on her parent committee that she would have. So we would meet with her monthly, and this was an opportunity for her to kind of play out some scenes for us on some policy that she was considering. And that was that opportunity for parents to kind of come and say, well, this may happen or that may happen, or these are the kinds of things that you need to consider. And I'd actually like to see that come back into play, because it would really help us to roll out many of our policies more smoothly. As a school district, we tend to rush on big decisions that need to get made. So we spend a lot of time working on the data and understanding the policy itself. But the implementation piece, because of the length of time it takes us to do the work itself, is very limited, and which doesn't allow us to properly plan. So I think utilizing parent groups more strategically, utilizing PTAs and PPS and PAC for strategy sessions, and being able to use them to be able to help us get information out, which is what you would think we would be doing with organizations, but that's not part of the way in which we work. So I think the silo piece is really important. So as a school board member, I've already shifted a lot of the isolating culture of communications. I really do feel like board members do need to be brought in earlier. I'm a policymaker that tends to do the work from the inside out instead of from the top down. And so a lot of the policies that I like to see implemented are the kinds of things that I actually hear from the ground, policies that would make quality of life very different for many of our families. And I think that that's an important piece to consider. And then early and often conversations. I don't think that we can have too many conversations, particularly about high-level policy decisions that are being made in the district. And I look forward to having those continued conversations with many of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Hydra. Next up is Stevan. You have 3 minutes.
Sure. thank you, and I appreciate the question. When we consider the most important policy decisions that affect all families, it is important to have, I think, a standard process for how we engage our communities. We have a lot of great communities here represented that have an ongoing way that they connect with parents, and we don't have really a process that ensures that they are participating from start to finish around some of those major decisions. So, one example of a way that this was done well that I think we should be doing in more of our policymaking approaches is what we did around the Safe and Supportive Schools resolution. We had a board member that worked with the superintendent and held several community meetings about what the implications would be of changing our suspension policy, getting voices from parents and teachers and principals, actually, who really pushed back against initially the idea of getting rid of willful defiance as a suspension policy, and engaging them to ensure that when we introduce it, everyone really understands what it means, and even if there are disagreements, they've been aired out and hopefully considered so that the implementation is a bit easier. Now, the implementation of safe, supportive schools has been a struggle in some areas, and that comes down to the way that we've designed our infrastructure around how we build out that support. So we do this well in some instances. Seeing where we do it well and ensure that we have a model to approach decisions in the future is where I would start. We have to figure out a way to leverage our technology to ensure that more people have information the way that they are used to getting it. So, if we have an inventory of what is the best way our parents receive information, like, do we actually know that? Are they most responsive to email? Do they prefer text messages? Do they want to hear it through their church or barbershop, right? And how are we utilizing those resources to engage people at the front end and have a process in place to keep them engaged through sources of information that they trust to ensure that their voices are being heard and things aren't a surprise? One of the things that I've done in this campaign, actually, because that really matters to me, is going into our most disenfranchised communities and talking about issues of the board. So at times it does require that board members are willing to go into spaces that they aren't usually seen in order to talk directly with people about what the implications of a policy decision might mean. Parents that have organized to come to the board know how to organize, and the fact that they didn't know, I think, is an issue. But what about the parents we never hear from? And what is our policy around getting in front of them and so that they feel empowered and engaged in their school community? I want to see that happen alongside the parents that are actually active, not being disengaged or not knowing what the process is. Thank you.
Thank you, Stevan. The score is still 2-2, bottom of the sixth. And so obviously we're not missing anything much more exciting here than in the game. Next up is Mark.
Great. I am thrilled to have this question. And as Hydra said, and I'm guessing a number of you have actually been in that school board room and have had that conversation. I came into this campaign, and one of the three tenets that I talked about in the very first piece of material, Mark Murphy for School Board, was improving communications with parents. For the past 15 to 18 months, what you all know as Prop C on the ballot was led through an initiative by the superintendent and by the mayor. And I was part of a stakeholder committee of about 15 and 18 people. And through that process, and in leading large community meetings, one which was here, probably 250 people here in this room, over the course of 15 months, thousands of San Franciscans said, It's really hard to engage. We're not sure where to go. We don't know how to pull the pieces together. We don't know what it is. There are all these resources, but we don't know how to make it all come together. If you read in the ballot booklet, you'll see that my title is communications consultant. That's what I do for a living. People hire me, companies hire me, organizations hire me to come in to pull pieces together, to pull groups and organizations together, to move people down the line, to ensure that whether it's a project, whether it's an initiative, whether it's a new program, that's what I do for a living. I bring people together to communicate and to implement projects. The big shift in culture that I would bring, I've been around the school board for many years, and there are changes being made, is, and a couple people have mentioned it, is to meet people where they are. And I mean that by physicality. I mean that by language. On the Public Education Enrichment Fund, one of the programs that we fund within the school district is translation. We know what translation services we're providing and who we're providing it to. We need to make sure that we're providing the information to communities, in community, to people so that they understand. There are so many ways in which we all communicate. Some people use the phone, some people are writing emails, some people are using the telephone, some people are still handwriting notes and letters. Communications is hard. It's really hard. We have to work hard to, in fact, reach out and say, in community, how is it that you want to engage? And everyone's going to do it differently, and that's okay. The challenge and the opportunity is then for us, as a school board, as a commissioner, to change the status quo to say, we need to engage early and often in ways that are going to be accessible to not just you who are here in the room and those who are listening to the replay, but as Stevan said, to the people who aren't engaging. We need to make sure that we're reaching out to those people, the 55,000 plus parents and caregivers and families of our children, so that they are engaged in what it is that we're doing.
Thank you, Mark. Next up, Dennis, you have 3 minutes.
Okay. So as I was preparing for this question, I did a little bit of research, and this is not a new question. I mean, for the longest time, parents, the school district, they've been trying to find ways to involve parents more. And I discovered that back in 2010, there was the SFUSD Parent Engagement and Partnership Plan. So there was this, and then in 2011, there was another project status and update in 2011 about how that was going. And so they mentioned some generalizations about what to do for parent engagement. And also there's a working draft in February of 2012 on what to do for parent engagement. So a couple of things that they mentioned were that they created a monthly Office of Family and Community Engagement newsletter. So that reached out to families, and I think that's a really good thing. But where is the disconnect? Why do we still have this question? Why are the parents still not engaged? I mean, this is 4 years ago. So some of the things that I believe that we need to do are these. Well, I believe that the infrastructure is there to engage and to reach out to all the parents. Does everyone know what School Loop is? Okay, very good. I think that we can really use School Loop to our advantage by reaching out to families, using School Loop and making sure that the parents go there to check for updates about new policies, maybe add a section about important or urgent items into School Loop, so that when parents look, they say, oh, okay, I see this blinking sign or something. Oh, something's new with the school district. Okay, let me read that. Oh, wait, there's no more meat on Mondays or something during the school lunches. So, I mean, whatever it might be, at least the parents are informed about what it is. And then for the families who don't have internet at home, I do have an old school solution, which is that the students, they would bring home the flyer to the parents, have the parents read it, sign it, bring it back to school, maybe as part of homework or something. But at least it reaches out to the families that have internet, families that don't. And then also, I think what we should do is have community organizations and or with the local PTAs hold gatherings to inform parents of important updates and new policies within the school district. I think that, as I said, again, emphasizing the use of School Loop to really help parents stay in the loop, using it to share important decisions, making sure that the Parent Advisory Committee also has a more prominent role through greater publicity and awareness, that they are the group that will represent parents' concerns and allow their voices to be heard by the Board of Education. And I also envision that I'll be working with the other board members to hold town hall meetings at local schools in collaboration with the Parent Advisory Council, with the local PTAs, and the superintendent to invite families to the schools, to each school, to learn about important policies and also to be heard. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Dennis. And now, Trevor, 3 minutes.
The question is a good one. It is also a timeless one, as we've heard. And I've got a solution. Superintendent emails the principals to do something. They photocopy something, give it to the teachers in their mailbox. The teachers give it to the kids give it to their parents, right? Done. And of course that doesn't work. And the problem is I still see this. This is what happens at my school. And I've seen this happen. And I teach seventh graders. If we're relying on that kind of outdated communication for major communications or small communications, it's just going to add to frustration. So I think that the intentions are there, and I think that, as Dennis pointed out, there's a lot of great policies, but where the rubber's hitting the road, there's a disconnect. And as someone from the front line, who, if elected, would be the first teacher in a decade elected to the school board, I really want to bring the perspective of someone who sees how policy actually becomes implemented. One of the things I would like to do is I just show up office hours. I've already made the promise that I will go to a school a week as a school board commissioner and talk, and I've already been actually doing that in this campaign, and there's actually someone in the audience who had met me at a school drop-off time. I would like to have much more translating. It's one of the main reasons I actually started running. When I started looking into just the websites, to the actual mechanisms that parents contest lottery situations or ask questions, there was a very, for San Francisco especially, embarrassing lack of translated websites and materials. One of the ideas I've been floating around is a translation office hours, for lack of a better term, where parents could call in at a specific moment, and at that time there would be an operator, basically, who could connect them with a department that they might want to ask a question with, or even better, a teacher. I speak Spanish, and that's great for communicating with families, but there are colleagues of mine who are great and well-meaning who don't speak Spanish. It would be great if there was a sort of set time that they could ring up a bilingual operator to make a phone call. I would like to see parent committees empowered more, just the way there are subcommittees within the school board that have to hear policy before they get voted on. I think it's not the most difficult thing to have one of the DLACs or ELACs or other parent committees sort of voice be given the policy before it's put in. But ultimately, when I started running, I didn't think transparency was going to be one of my issues. You know, I had all these other things I was excited about. But in the process of running, transparency and accountability comes up again and again and again for me. And one of the things I would like to do is walk, you know, the way Rachel Norton has her blog, but a little more specifically, walk parents and stakeholders and students through my personal experience as a new commissioner from idea to implementation. What meetings am I taking? When does that happen? And really make sure that we are being transparent about the dates, times, and means through which we are communicating new policy proposals or decisions.
Great. Thank you, Trevor. A couple things. I'm sad to report that Kansas City scored. It is now 3-2. Bottom of six. And Dr. Emily Morase just walked in. How you doing? You caught your breath? Are you okay? All right. We are on the part where people are answering the question that you received yesterday, but I'm going to take a little break in that and introduce you and have you give your two-minute opening statement. And then next up would be Shimon to answer this question, and then it'll be back to you after that, okay? So let's take a little break in this and give Emily a chance at her introduction and 2 minutes, and then we'll get back to the question at hand. So, let me get back. Dr. Emily Morase is Vice President of the Board of Education, a public school parent of a middle schooler and a high schooler, and a proud graduate of SFUSD. She is endorsed by the Parent PAC, the Coleman Action Fund, the SF Chronicle, the Bay Guardian, and the Tsingtao Daily. Emily, you have 2 minutes.
Good evening, everyone. Let's try that again. Good evening, everyone. Thank you all for being here tonight. That is so important to us that you care about our schools. The Giants are great, but schools are really, really very important to us. So Emily Murase, proud graduate of SFUSD. I have a sophomore in high school and a seventh grader in middle school. And I do this work because my father was the son of immigrant sharecroppers from Japan, grew up in the Central Valley, and what really enabled him to leave the farm behind was education. He went to public school, graduated at the top of his class. His parents didn't let him initially go to college because they needed him on the farm. He ran away from the farm to go to college, was eventually able to earn a degree to be able to teach social welfare, and he was for a long time a professor of social work at San Francisco State. There just aren't very many countries in the world where you can go from such humble beginnings to a very, very rewarding career. And I believe every one of our 57,000 students deserve those kinds of opportunities. I went through K-12, SFUSD, had pretty amazing opportunities to be able to take advantage of, worked for a nonprofit on global issues, worked for AT&T in Tokyo, worked for the Clinton White House for a year, Federal Communications Commission. Now I serve the mayor as head of the Commission on the Status of Women. And I apologize to my colleagues in the audience. I was late tonight because we had a commission meeting where we were talking about girls' health issues. We were talking about healthy mothers and some of this expertise I have brought to this school board. I'm seeking a second term. I have an ABC agenda on academic achievement, bullying, and college and career-ready graduates that I hope I'll have a chance to discuss. Thank you.
Thank you, Emily. And now back to our two-part question. As a reminder, parents have come to a school board meeting and previously unaware of changes that were happening at their children's school. What steps would you take in response, and what changes do you think need to happen to more effectively communicate with families? And we are now to Shimon. Three minutes.
Jill. So one, I want to approach this question or answer this question from two lenses and two approaches. So the first lens is as a parent. As a parent who had his children very, very early, age 16 and 17, I have my daughter and then my son. As a parent who has raised two children in public school, when I go to sleep at night, if my phone rings in the middle of the night, the first thing that comes to mind is, are my children okay? And they are 22 and 23 years old. The first thing that comes to mind is, are my children okay? Then everybody else, of course, in that scenario, but that's the first thing that comes to mind. The second lens is as a community advocate, as a board member of Parents for Public Schools, as someone who is very, very concerned about the future of our youth. Why did I bring those two scenarios up to answer this question? The main thing is this. Parents want to always know where their children are, and they always want to know what opportunities their children are going to have. And that's just one of many things that we always are concerned about. So the first approach is, the question talks about, what do you do when parents come to this commission meeting? They're upset. A decision has already been made. And these parents are upset. How do you deal with that and make sure that they feel that they're still heard when we're talking about making sure we provide a quality education for their children? So one of the things I would definitely do after reading the room and seeing parents and feeling their anger and feeling them being upset is provide an opportunity and discuss with the chair and the colleagues, like, we got to make sure we provide more time for parents to speak tonight. We got to make sure that we provide time and opportunity for parents to voice what they're upset about and what their opinion is, because that part is important. And possibly, if it involves a vote, maybe tonight we don't vote on this scenario because we may have to go back to the table and have conversations with parents. Now, on the flip side, the second approach, of course, is what do we do to avoid this? I've been in plenty of leadership situations in my young years, and I still think 39 is young. Different presidencies for different organizations, et cetera. And the one thing that I've always known is that the more time you spend with your constituents or the people that you are representing, the more time you spend prior to any meeting and having conversations with them, the better off you are in terms of getting everybody to work together and build a consensus. So we need forms, ongoing forms with parents, whether they're monthly, whether they're quarterly, whether they're in person, whether they're webinars. They need to be ongoing, talking about the issues of the schools, talking about things that we are thinking of doing prior to just announcing them. And we also need to go, as Mark said, into communities where parents are. The one thing you'll get from me is somebody who will go everywhere. You call me, and I will come and respond.
Thank you, Shimon. And Emily, you're up again. You have 3 minutes to answer the question you received yesterday.
I was just looking for it. So
would you like me to read it again?
Yes.
All right. A group of parents has come to a board meeting with strong concerns about changes to a district-wide policy and are worried that their students' needs are not being met. They say they did not even know these changes were happening until they saw the policy being implemented at their school. One, what steps would you take in response to these parents' concerns? And two, what change at the district level do you think needs to happen so that parents and caregivers don't feel out of the loop when important decisions are made? As a school board member, what would you do to shift the culture of communication at the district level? What is your role in effective communication policies, and how do you make sure families are both informed and listened to?
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Family engagement is really very essential. That when you look at successful schools, they have very large resources in terms of parents and families, guardians, grandparents who are part of the life of a school. There's some research that shows that some of the most successful schools are schools on military bases, because actually the military mandates how many hours a parent has to spend at their school. And we have some really great examples in the district of very active schools. Having said that, there is sometimes a disconnect between content that's going on, issues that arise at the school board that don't necessarily get communicated to the school sites. And so one of the things that I would love to see is a family liaison at every school. I know many of our schools do have family liaisons, but not all of them. And I think part of the role of the family liaison is to make sure that the parent community is connected to what's going on at the board. We also have great partners in Parents for Public Schools, the PTA, and the Parent Advisory Council, which I chaired in a former lifetime, to help make sure that parents are part of the conversation. But I want to give a specific example. There was a proposal by my colleagues to change the student assignment system and to flip the CTIP1 preference. So that particular proposal was introduced formally in June after school had basically let out. And the proposal was to have a vote at the school board in August, like the first week of school. And while I support the CTIP flip, I did not support that timing, because I don't think you can introduce something after school lets out and approve it the first week of school when people haven't had an opportunity to meet. The Parent Advisory Council hadn't met, PPS, PTA. Like, we need to have the best policy is policy that includes all of the stakeholders. So while I support that flip, I did not support the timing, because I didn't feel like we had enough consultations with our stakeholders.
Thank you, Emily. And I now see on Trevor's phone, it's not on mine yet, but Kansas City's up 7-2, so aren't you glad you came here? Yay. Yeah, 7-2. Okay, moving on. Nope, we're moving on to you. Moving on from the game, which is not going well, to the debate, which is going well. And Jamie, you have your 3 minutes.
Thank you so much. Okay, so one of the great benefits, I think, about electing an educator is they understand what's occurring in a school. More specifically, in my managerial focus at my school, this is something I deal with. And I want to start out by saying, I know every single one of the parents of my students, the parents or guardians, even many just family members. I know every single one of them, and every single one of them know me. Further, I approach so much like a teacher, as I was trained to be a teacher, whether it be backwards by design and thinking about what's the end result and how can we get there, but most importantly, as a behaviorist part of my job, managing antecedents. And kind of one of the antecedents connections that I'm making here is I would already have engaged so many of the parents and guardians and everyone who is a stakeholder in the education of their child way before maybe some of these arguments came before me as a school board member. So, I need to understand, I'm thinking about this like going through it in a teacher's lens. I need to understand where I'm focusing all my effort. So I'd want to take data. I'd want first baseline data, what parents aren't getting information. And I'd want to quantify that somehow and then target whether it be coordinators, regional coordinators, liaisons working from a school to a family. I've worked community rep. I've gone into communities. I've gone into homes. I'm very comfortable with that and very comfortable hearing from families, validating, and making sure that they have a clear line of communication that's accountable. So whether it be giving emails or also leveraging the networks that all of us have, whether it be community engagement and making sure whether it be a barbershop, a community group, a PTA, that people have a clear line or a chain of command line into me as a school board commissioner and other commissioners. So after taking the baseline data, we need a kind of layered response as well. So at my school, we do have a daily note that goes home to parents. Do all of them come back? No. But then I call people. We also have email. We have websites. I've at a previous school I worked at, every single one of our classrooms had a website that was checked by parents, but not all of the parents had web access at the time, Wi-Fi at their home. I would also support providing electronic devices to children and families so that if they don't have, they can go off cellular networks or even working with the city, county, as well as other independent companies to ensure that we have Wi-Fi throughout our communities as part of the technological infrastructure renovations that we need in the school. But I really want to understand which parents aren't being targeted by the communications that currently exist and then targeting the resources there.
Thank you so much, Jamie. I want to remind everyone that if you have cards, please write questions on the cards and raise your hand, and we have folks that will collect them and bring them up to me. And I want to thank the candidates for being such good time people. So well done. It's going to get harder now. So the next section is questions submitted by the sponsoring organizations. Each question will be directed at two candidates, and they will each have 1 minute to respond. Timekeeper, you ready for that 1 minute? It's going to go fast. All right. The first question is Parents for Public Schools, and this will be for Stevan and Jamie. A teacher shortage is upon us. Attracting and retaining high-quality teachers, especially those with bilingual and special education credentials, has become increasingly challenging in our district and across the state. What do you see as the root causes of this predicament, and what changes would you propose to address this challenge? Stevan?
Yeah, my main policy platform has been teacher retention. We lose an incredible amount of our teachers in the first 5 years. The things that I've been focused on is having a forward-looking strategy on what we need to put in place to recruit the best people in the country. San Francisco is sort of middle salary range around what we pay teachers when they start. We have a later hiring schedule that's in the surrounding district, so our top educators may be lured to go to another county before they consider ours. Those are all things that we need to reconsider if we're going to be able to compete to get the best people. The third thing is, as a young person doing important work in education policy, connecting directly with college students and graduate students about coming to our district, being the champion for our schools and telling them personally what my teachers meant to me, and helping the recruitment effort, and doing that not only in our counties, but being able to do that across the country. So that's the reason why I made it like my top policy platform and what I plan to focus on once I'm elected.
Thank you, Stevan. Jamie, 1 minute.
This is something I deal with on a daily basis. I work in special ed, and it's always hard to find special education teachers and retain them. Teachers often live in limbo, this idea of when am I going to be pink slipped? Where am I going to have a job? and especially teachers living in the city and county of San Francisco, how am I going to afford to live in the community that I serve in? We need to ensure that teachers live in the communities they serve. It makes such a difference. So I would also encourage as a school board commissioner that we need to subsidize teacher housing. We need to also help support our current students to know that teaching is a great profession to get into. We need to encourage children young to get into teaching, and that when they do, we need to make sure that they're supported both with pay and benefits, but also with oversight and feedback. As a novice teacher myself, I needed my mentor teacher to be there for me and help direct me, and teachers need that direction, and really school districts need to ensure that when someone does enter that, that will be there for them.
Thank you, Jamie. At the request of the San Francisco Parent PAC, this question will be directed to Hydra Mendoza and Emily Morasse. Being a member of the school board is not a full-time paid position, and many commissioners have a different day job. Sometimes these jobs and employers present a potential conflict of interest in specific votes or areas, as this elected position requires commissioners to first serve the students of SFUSD rather than their employer or personal relationships. Hydra, you are the Education and Family Services Advisor to the mayor, and Emily, you are the Executive Director of the SF Department on the Status of Women, a mayoral appointed position. Please talk about how you handle this potential conflict of interest and give an example that demonstrates your independence. I'm going to give you a couple seconds to think about that. Emily, you have 1 minute.
So this is not a difficult question because our mayor has such a strong commitment to education. So he has really used the power of his office to advance education. One example where I differed with the mayor was on the soda tax. The mayor officially does not have a position on the soda tax, but based on the research that I did, looked at a lot of UCSF work, looked at other work about the really negative impact that soda has on our young people, I really had to struggle with that. But came out in support of this soda tax because our children's health is too important, and there was so much evidence that a tax on the number of ounces of soda would really impact demand and help with our obesity issue.
Thank you, Emily. Hydra, 1 minute.
Sure. Thank you. This wasn't your question, Jill?
It was not. Yeah. I swear to you.
I actually look at this as a complement of interest. This whole idea, it's a tough job. It's a tough job to balance both being staff and being boss. And there are many times when I'm with the mayor and in school settings where I take a step back because I see myself as the staff in that role. But there are also many times when I show leadership in a different way. So this to me is a complementary of interest. It also, for me, I look at what does the school district need. I don't look at this as what does the mayor need. And then how do we approach this from a citywide perspective? Because these are children throughout our city. And if we don't educate our kids properly, it has huge impact on healthcare, public safety, workforce development. There's a lot of things that are very challenged. And I've actually raised quite a bit of money for the school district with the help of the mayor. So we've been able to look at $8 million that's gone to the middle schools. We've raised money for teacher awards, scholarships, a lot of the citywide issues. And an example would be when SEIU asked us not to break away from the city for benefits. And I took a position that was contrary to the mayor at the time.
Great. Thank you, Hydra. The next question is from the 2nd District PTA, and it is for Shimon and Trevor. There's a push towards more differentiated instruction, especially with the newly adopted Common Core math sequence. Though there is a constant challenge of adequate resources and need to support teachers in this work, how can SFUSD meet the needs of high-performing students to ensure their continued engagement and success in their education?
And we only have 1 minute?
Yeah, that could be an hour, right?
So one of the things for me that I one of the reasons why I truly support Common Core is because of the encouraged learning together for students. I think that that is very, very important. And so in a lot of situations, particularly with Common Core, and let's take math, for instance, you have a student who excels, who's doing very well working with groups of students that may not have the same level of math skills. But that student that is doing very well has the opportunity to, of course, continue their repetition in learning math while they're also assisting other students in learning how to be leaders and learning how to help instruct and help other people grow and do well. So I think that part of that piece is important. But then there's also the thing where we have to make sure that our students who do well have opportunities to strive and have opportunities to, of course, be challenged. And that's where we have to make sure that our after-school programs, our more enrichment programs within the school, academic decathlons, other opportunities that heighten the academic opportunities for our students that do well. That has worked in many cases in other areas, and I can give you some examples, but a minute is not long enough to answer that question.
I'm sorry. Trevor.
As a teacher, I see Common Core as a promise. I think that moving towards a world of more creative thinking, more problem solving, is where we should be. And for the student who is excelling at math, I've heard from a lot of other great math teachers that there are ways that you can make them become go deeper. So it's a matter of rigor and vigor. If a kid is really just great with their times tables, introduce them to cultures that don't have a base 10s counting system. I know that seems crazy because that's not on the test, but that's critical thinking. That's 21st century multicultural thinking. That's being able to move from one thing to another, and that's going to help them excel at classes beyond math. So I see a lot of promise for empowering teachers to creatively challenge those students. But ultimately, I think what this is, because I'm not a math teacher, I'm a language arts and social studies teacher. To answer this question, I had to seek out advice from math teachers. I think that this is a good example of how we need to do a much better job communicating with parents to ease anxieties, provide really good information, and also build collaboration, because I bet there are really great ideas out there about how teachers could be doing those challenging extra things.
That was a long last statement, but okay.
I know how to draw out a sentence.
All right. The next question is for Dennis and Mark, and it's from Support for Families of Children with Disabilities. What is your vision for special education? That's it. That's a question.
Yeah.
Dennis?
So my vision for special ed would be to hire more teachers. I have a friend who works at Alice Foam U in special ed, and he tells me that there's a lot of attrition with special ed teachers, the reason being that the grass is greener on the other side. A lot of them go to the San Mateo School District or maybe the East Bay or elsewhere where the benefits are better, the salary is better, rents are lower. What we need to do is really provide teachers with higher salaries, give them better benefits, help them with housing. In fact, on the housing issue, I worked last week with Citibank, Meta, CCCS, both nonprofits, to lead a workshop to help teachers to find affordable housing. And many teachers told me that, oh, I didn't even realize these programs were available to help me find housing in San Francisco. So it's not all doom and gloom. And so we would start there, raise teacher salaries, help find affordable housing for teachers. Thank you.
And Mark?
In 1 minute, right. The vision for special education. My vision for special education is to have powerful, enriching, supportive education for all of our special education students. That's the vision. The way in which to make that happen is a couple of two or three things. One, we know that our paraprofessionals, we know we have a huge challenge of paraprofessionals today in San Francisco, in the district, in our special education classes. One, there are negotiations going on. They need to be paid more, and we need more professional development for our paraprofessionals in our classroom. The second thing is, and it's been mentioned a couple of times, is we need additional special education teachers, instruction, educators. And again, there is tremendous professional development that can be done and should be done, I believe, for our special education students and program. The vision is powerful, enriching, inclusive special education for all of our children, and that's done in a couple of different ways, from paraprofessional support increased and teacher support as well.
Thank you, Mark.
The last question from sponsoring organizations is from SF Education Fund, and this will be for Hydra and Trevor. What new measures will you champion to shrink the achievement gap among low-income students? Hydra?
So for me, it's early education. So that piece is so critical. I think we have too many of our children that don't even start off on the same footing. So the achievement gap actually grows and grows and grows and grows and gets to a point where you can't even, it's difficult to shrink. You can't shrink it because our kids are too far gone. And when we have places where we are challenged with bringing them back, it's about opportunities, it's about engagement, it's about providing technology and innovation to enhance the learnings for our students. It's to bring them back and keep them in. It's to be persistent, it's to make sure that they are honored, that they are respected, that they feel that there are opportunities for them and that they don't fall off the map. And I think we've seen some really great improvements over the years with double-digit growth in our African-American, Latino, and Pacific Islander students in the district?
It's a great question, especially the point about measures. One of the reasons I decided to run for school board is I went through the candidate statements for the last few cycles, and the achievement gap, or as I see it, an opportunity gap, is this persistent, perennial problem that folks are trying to address, and so why does it still exist? And one of the things that I hope to offer is that practitioner frontline perspective of, here's this great policy that the district is implementing or trying to implement, and by the time it hits my classroom, how does it actually work? I'm a big fan of solutions, not suspensions. I've never suspended a student because the student who needs to be suspended probably is the student that needs the most time in your classroom. I would like us to get better metrics on seat time. How much time are you spending outside of the classroom? And I mean that for those 5 minutes that the teacher has told you to leave the classroom to calm down. That's not a suspension, but that's still 5 minutes of not being in the classroom. So I would like to collect better metrics on seat time. I would like to prioritize funding for helping teachers track students beyond the grades. One of the things that I do as a seventh grade teacher is I buy pizza for the sixth grade teachers, and they tell me about my students, and I think we need to do that with fifth grade teachers for kids transitioning to middle school. Preschool is important, but middle school is too.
Great. Thank you, Trevor. The final section of the evening will be questions from the audience. I have some up here. I encourage you to fill out more cards, and our collectors will bring them up to me. So just raise your hand. Again, two candidates will answer each question, and they will have 1 minute each to respond. And so for the first question, Shimon and Emily, do you think it's a problem that over one quarter of San Francisco families don't choose public schools? And what is your plan for changing that statistic? Shimon?
So it's definitely a problem. Yes, it is a problem that we have a good chunk of families that choose private school over public school. One of the things that we need to do is bring quality schools to every neighborhood and community. When we talk about the fact that we have schools that have great programs on certain sides of San Francisco that don't exist in other areas, this is why we have an equity issue. But if we have quality schools in every neighborhood and every community, families have great choices. They will choose the schools in their communities, or they will choose the schools that are maybe not in their community but have things to offer that make sense to them as families. But choice is the issue. And some of our families don't have choice. And that's why we need to build quality across the district. So making sure that the quality of our schools is increased will keep families here. Another thing, of course, that will keep families here, which is only a small role we can play, is making sure that San Francisco is more affordable. Because there are borderline families that actually move out of San Francisco but maybe send their children to private school somewhere else because they make an exchange for housing for school.
Great. Thank you. Emily?
I think it's important for people to know that that number has been stable for decades, the number of private school students, and that we have some very high-performing private schools. I am not going to cast aspersions on private schools, and I have a confession. When I was looking for kindergarten for my older daughter, the Friends School was just opening. My
family background happens to be Quaker. So I thought about it. But then I went to the Parents for Public Schools school fair at McAteer at the SOTA campus. And I just saw all these parents and teachers. It was so diverse, and there was so much great energy that thought was very fleeting. And I threw myself into the public school world. I joined the Parent-Teacher Community Council at the Japanese Bilingual Program when my daughter was still 4 years old, because I wanted to find out, you know, what did parents have to contribute. So really, I think our public schools have a lot to offer.
Thank you. The next question will be for Stevan and Dennis. And the question is, how will you engage with UESF teachers and the district to help reach agreement and prevent a teacher strike? We can all hope that that will not happen and it will not be something that the next board will have to deal with. But contract talks will come up again in the next four-year term. So Stevan and Dennis, even though you're not currently involved, this is a perennial question over the years. So Stevan?
Yeah, so I should say that I'm proud to have the support of UESF, and I was their top-ranked candidate in my questionnaires, and they really understand that I know the issues that they're facing. And I've been very I've done a lot of outreach to the district, to Mi Young, who oversees the budget for the district, to ask what the details were around why we have this stalemate. Having good faith efforts to bring people to the table is important, but there's been a lot of mistrust over the years around why we haven't reached an agreement, and that's the reason why the teachers haven't endorsed incumbents the last two cycles. There's a lot of mistrust, and so we need to have people that they support, that that listen to their concerns, but are also going to be open and independent when coming to the table. And it's not an easy solution. All I can say is that I'll get up every morning committed to hearing both people out and finding out where we can offer some real solutions for people. I don't know if the number is 21%, but finding to ensure that they get something more is something that I'm committed to doing.
Thank you, Stevan. Dennis?
Well, I would let me start by saying this. The teachers haven't had an actual raise since 2008. While their salaries have been adjusted for their years of experience, what I would do if I were a Board of Education member is, well, what happened that led to the impasse is the teachers union, they proposed a 21% increase over 3 years, and the school board came back and said, we'll give you an 8% increase over 3 years. So a very large disparity. And so the school board came, or the teachers union came back and said, well, we would take a 13.35% raise over 2 years, and the school district would not budge under 8.5%. If I were a member, I would propose we meet somewhere in the middle, an 11% increase, and we wouldn't have to go through an impasse. That is what I would propose. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Dennis. All right, the next question is for Mark and Jamie. The district leadership has announced several exciting initiatives, such as the Middle School Salesforce Tech Partnership and the Circle of Schools Individual School Corporate Partner Program. The district often falls down on implementation and execution. How, as a board member, would you work to hold district leadership accountable for quality staffing and execution, underlined twice, of these types of programs? Mark?
So as I mentioned earlier, my day job, again, we talked about the school board being a 20-hour a week, 30-hour a week position, but my day job is implementing programs, implementing plans, implementing projects for companies and organizations. It is really important when you're doing project management or when someone is doing an implementation of something too. And for me, I wouldn't be implementing the plan, but it would be holding people accountable for who are your stakeholders. What are your target dates? What are your stop dead dates? What are those things that you can't move past and beyond? What are the things that are going to hold you back? Building out project plans, and from my standpoint, being a governance and oversight body member as a Board of Education person, looking at new programs and new plans that the district is rolling out, I can tell you I would be very firm in ensuring that our district staff was providing a very strong plan for how it is that they are going to be implementing any new projects, any new plans, to the standards that I would hold for myself and my clients and my work.
Thank you, Mark. Jamie?
Yeah. Very clearly, setting up clear expectations. What's the expectation of the program? Therefore, further from that, monitoring with efficient oversight, clear praise and rewarding for whatever benchmarks were met, and accountability through disciplinary channels if necessary for deficits in enacting the vision of whatever occurs.
Great, thank you. Okay, excellent. I like the timing on that. That's good. All right. The next question is for Emily and Dennis. Our district welcomes many newcomer students each year, and even more this year. How can we support those students and their families to feel engaged in our community and make sure we continue to have space in specialized programs for all newcomer students as this population expands? Emily?
So language is a big barrier for our newcomer families, and I know that this past year a major project of the district has been to translate report cards into other languages other than English. Because how is a parent to understand the progress that their kids are making if the report cards is in a language that they don't understand? So something as simple as report cards. We have a very hardworking translation department, but they're very underfunded and understaffed. So as money comes in, we'd like to beef up our translation department because we want to overcome these language barriers.
Thank you. Dennis?
Well, one thing, as Emily mentioned, would be more translation services, and I'm in complete agreement with that. The second item would be to hire more bilingual teachers. And so a recent survey has shown that out of our 55,000 students in the public schools, or in the San Francisco Unified School District, 17,000, at least 17,000, are in bilingual programs. And so I'm sure that number is only going to go north. And so what we really need to do is hire more bilingual teachers. And so that way, we can really help our students, the newcomer students, really become engaged in the classroom, really feel comfortable in the classroom, also help the parents. They have an adult that they can communicate with as well. So these are the two things that I would do to help the newcomers, both parents and students, feel more involved, engaged in the school district.
Thank you, Dennis. The next question from the audience is for Hydra and Mark. African American and students of color are suspended at a much higher rate than their peers. How would you address the issue if elected or reelected to the board? Mark?
Sure. So as a start, the solution is not suspension legislation. The resolution that was passed last year at the school board was a really great start. And we have the numbers show that the number of African-American and Latino men in particular, the numbers that are being suspended are falling, which is absolutely the right thing. In order to take this resolution, though, and move it forward, it's about the implementation. As we've talked about in many ways, passing resolutions and doing those are great, but it is all about the implementation. So ensuring that our on-site, our school instructors, our educators, our administrators on-site have the tools, have the necessary means to implement the solutions, not suspensions resolution that was passed so that we can effectively use peer resources, we can effectively use mentoring programs, we can effectively implement the behavior changes that we've talked about and implemented as a school board, but giving tools to educators and on-site administrators so that we can ensure that our children are staying in the classroom.
Thank you. Hydra.
So I agree with Mark. And in addition to that, I don't know if many of you know, but suspensions and expulsions are actually voted on by the board. And not many school districts actually do that. So that's handled elsewhere. So when we saw the suspensions and expulsions coming through at such high levels, we started to look at those suspensions and expulsions very differently, particularly for African-American and Latino students. So we really started to look at what are the early warning indicators, because many of the students that we were seeing were truant, they'd been suspended before.
before. I mean, there were just so many things. We wondered how they were possibly in ninth grade after having missed so much school since, you know, since second grade. So the early warning indicators, I think, are really critical for us to make some determinations on who we need to be paying closer attention to. And then I also think what we've been doing around restorative justice is a really critical piece. But restorative justice is also something that we have to be really mindful of, because it's something that works really well in the schools. It's a language that we all can speak. It's a way in which our kids can interact with adults. But we have to also make sure that they understand the way in which it's utilized.
Thank you. The next question is for Shimon and Trevor. What do you think is the greatest challenge our district faces in making sure every learner is able to reach his or her full potential and graduate ready for college, career, and life? Shimon?
Well, I think the biggest issue besides some of the systemic equity issues we've had is the resources that we have in our district. If we look at the past few years up until recently with the passage of Prop 30, districts have taken a hit, and San Francisco is no different in terms of the resources that we have. So we need increased resources. We are in a better space because of the passage of Prop 30 and local control funding formula. But just imagine now the amount of teachers we can have in our classrooms. Just imagine now, if we prioritize appropriately, the amount of paraprofessionals we can put in our schools. At the end of the day, we need more caring adults working with our children. We need more certified adults working with our children. The more caring adults we have, the better our children will feel, the more quality education they will have. So for me, it's always a resource issue, and for me, it's always something I will fight for and have done a great job of doing in several different capacities. And there are ways to get more resources into this district, which I will be focusing on and tremendously.
Absolutely. I would agree that the biggest thing is almost always funding. It's not the silver bullet, but when you need a school psychiatrist, when you need an extra paraprofessional to implement mainstreaming of special ed kids, when you need translation services, you just need more funding. And I will always be working for that. But I, you know, instantly when I heard that question, I did think about one other thing, and that is individualization. I think that in general, that's a very difficult thing to do at schools. But if you remember that everyone up here and everyone in that classroom and in the administration is in it for the right reasons, freeing them and letting them be creative in individualizing approaches to their own populations, their own cultures, can be a really powerful thing that I've seen work at schools. This goes to vocational education. Sometimes teenagers know what they want to do. We need to be empowering them. That's a way to fight truancy. We need to be thinking about people who learn differently. I'm dyslexic. I don't have an IEP or 504, but I learn differently. And so when a teacher comes to me and acknowledges that individual nature, I thrive as a learner, and I think we can do that for our kids.
Great. Thank you. It's still 7-2. Sorry. Okay. The next question is for Jamie and Steve-On. There are a number of charter schools that are doing really well in SFUSD. Their curriculum is cutting edge, parent involvement is high, strides are being made in closing the achievement gap. Yet charter schools are often an afterthought in district-wide initiatives. They are not used as model schools for our underperforming schools. With that, please share your opinion on what the role of charter schools can and should be in SFUSD. And do you support charter schools in general? Jamie?
Yeah. Thank you. I support limited charter schools if they're using public funds. I believe public funds go to public schools. What I do really appreciate, and I know we have people here with the charter school movement and working in charter schools, I love to see charter schools as a kind of experimental lab of learning. There's so much freedom that charter schools have and have the opportunity to provide to parents, families, children to kind of open up learning that doesn't necessarily happen within the district, within the confines of like a unified district that we have here, which can then be incorporated into our public schools. So I think there's definitely a point, definitely a purpose, and it's great to have charter schools limited when they're taking public funds and bring some of that greatness that's happening there back into our public schools.
Great. Thank you, Jamie. Steve-On?
Yeah. So not all charters are created equal. Charter schools are public schools. They are allowed to have district sites, and they get per pupil funding from the state. they are outside of the traditional, our unified school district, so they have to abide by our policies. There are different challenges based on the type of charter school that is in question. So in general, I don't have an issue with charter schools. My thing comes down to, is the school serving students well? If we have a track record that charter schools are systemically pushing out our low-income students or our special needs students, then they're not serving those students well. They're pushing those students out to be served by the district. Any great practice at any school site needs to be highlighted and shared. There is a program that allows for teachers to share that practice across school districts called the Teacher Empowerment Network. So that allows for educators to see what the others are doing well and to implement those things into their practice. So it comes down to an issue of practice, and that comes down to who's in the building. Ensuring we have the best people on the job means that our students can serve well.
Great, thank you so much. I have my little chart. Everybody's even. Okay. Next question is for Dennis and Jamie. As you know, the developers for the proposed 10-story building at the 16th Street BART Plaza have been negotiating with the school district to elevate the playground at Marshall School in an effort to reduce opposition to their building within the school community. My question is, what do you think about that issue specifically, and or the more general issue of the school district accepting gifts from private developers when that gift is aimed at tilting the public debate in their favor? Jamie?
Yeah, I am firmly no wall in the mission. I am against this firmly. I have been out there at the rallies for the 16th Street Mission Plaza. I don't want any changes to that Marshall Elementary. I just don't support this development. I live at Market and Goff. I live in pretty much that neighborhood, and I'm seeing the gentrification that is really pushing out low-income and working-class families, and it's a travesty. I don't support this development. I do support developments that have, whether it be Jane Kim's proposed 30% affordable housing, we need to have more affordable housing, less market rate housing. I'm a firm supporter of Prop G. I'm, of course, a supporter of Prop E, but I'm definitely against the wall in the mission. I'm against this complex. I think we need housing near our BART stations and near our transport networks, but definitely not here and not now.
Thank you. Dennis?
Yes. I believe that I am in agreement with Jamie, and that I feel that we need more affordable housing, not more market rate housing. And as Jamie alluded to, there is a lot of gentrification going on in San Francisco. And so we do need to aim for and push for more affordable housing. There certainly is a very small supply of housing, and the demand is great. But I think that we can really find solutions to help find and build affordable housing. And so, as I mentioned earlier, I did work with META, the Mission Economic Development Agency, and the Consumer Credit Council of San Francisco last week to lead a teacher housing workshop to provide to teachers ways and programs in which they could find affordable housing and find a home here in San Francisco. So I do feel that there are ways that we can go about this, and we don't have to build more market rate buildings. Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis. I'm going to take this opportunity to ask a moderator question, something that is on my mind often as I cover the school board. The school board meetings often start late, and they go very, very long, as anybody who has attended will know. And I'm often sitting there at 11 o'clock at night waiting for a vote to report on it, even though it won't make the paper the next day. And even though there's no one else in the audience waiting for that vote because they've gone home to tuck their kids in bed, I'd like to get your thoughts on ensuring that democracy and participation are part of the legislative process as a school board member, and what thoughts you have on ensuring that during school board meetings. And this is for Shimon and Stevan.
So my first thought on the question, or the statement, if I understand it correctly, I definitely think it would be unfair to time a school board meeting. There are so many serious situations that we have to deal with in school board meetings that there are going to be times where we all have to make a commitment to make sure that we're there to be present, to be visible. And so whether or not I like being up late or staying out late or missing Giants games tonight. That's just what we sign up for as parents. That's what we sign up for as school board commissioners. So, but I will say, just in terms of the legislative process, one thing I do feel strongly about that I've seen work is the work that you do before you come to meetings, the work you do with community, the work you do with parents, the work you do with families, the work commissioners do together. That helps alleviate a lot of bureaucracy or misinformation during school board meetings. So the more time we spend together, working together outside of meetings, I think the better off the experience will be when you're talking about having commission meetings.
Steve-on?
Not only school board meetings go really long, but if you're a parent who's never been to a school board meeting, it's more likely than not that you probably won't understand everything that's going on. You know, we have a lot of serious challenges to ensure that the information people are talking about is accessible. But there are a lot of great ways, I think, to capture the interest of parents before meetings even occur. One thing that I've been talking about this entire campaign is having something similar to a Yelp review around the way that our offices engage with families. We should know if a parent had a terrible experience trying to enroll their kids in school, which I know happens pretty frequently, but there's no way to hold that office accountable or the school board accountable around that experience. Ensuring that we have those systems in place and we're capturing the engagement of parents and anyone that wants to involve themselves in a school board meeting is going to be useful in figuring out, you know, how we prioritize our agenda and the amount of time we should allot to certain issues. So, you know, we can definitely have better systems to, you know, I'll wrap it up.
Thanks, Devon. Cutting it short like at 7 p.m. is not an option, I guess. Yeah. All right, so. That was my hope. But. The next question is for Trevor and Emily. Many of the suggestions tonight regarding hiring more teachers or providing more translation services and many of the other suggestions the candidates have made tonight, all of that costs money. Where is that going to come from? Prop 30 won't bring in enough right away. Trevor?
Prop 30 won't bring in enough right away. There is money out there. There are grants available for vocational education that the Department of Labor at the federal level will help us with. I think sometimes San Francisco is so used to being able to pass bonds because our voters are very supportive of education that there is a little money left on the table, but it's not everything. I do believe that there are efficiencies to be found. I don't think that there's great corruption or anything else happening right now, but I do think that there are ways. You know, I went to a back-to-school night at Aragon, and at the end of it, I saw three huge tubs of 150-page paper booklets being recycled. Okay, there might be legal, statutory reasons why things have to be put on paper sometimes, like with the student handbook, but there are other moments where we are wasting enormous amounts of resources, and I think that there are inefficiencies, and I would like to really have a public audit of those involving the community, because they often know where those cuts could possibly happen.
Thank you, Trevor. Emily?
So there's short-term and long-term answers. So in the short term, in the foreseeable future, Prop 30 is going to help our budget. It's going to bring in dollars that we didn't have before. And I just want to acknowledge the work that Hydro has been doing with the private sector. You know, the tremendous investment that Salesforce is making in our middle grades is going to bring new resources. But finally, in the long term, and I was on the board when we passed a resolution in support of Prop 13 reform, we are going to have to force the state to really fund education at the level that it had been funding prior to Prop 13. I read somewhere in the LA Times that Disneyland pays something like a nickel per square foot in property taxes. Like, okay, we all enjoy Disneyland, but they have an obligation to help contribute to educating our children in the state, and there's no reason why our corporations in California should not be asked to pay their fair share.
Thank you, Emily. The next question is for Hydra and Mark. We touched on this a little bit, but I'm going to ask the question from an audience member in a slightly different way. Much focus is placed on low-income special needs and English learners. What focus should be placed on the higher class
gifted students, and native English speakers. Mark?
So, thinking about, in response to this, there are a couple different things that I'm thinking about, and one of them is, again, with some schools taking away their honors programs in schools, we now have different ways of, Trevor talked about it before, which is the implementation of the Common Core. And with Common Core, I come back to this, so my husband, again, a teacher, has been looking at this for 2+ years and looking at math curriculum and looking at how it is that we're going to teach our children. And I believe in the Common Core implementation, in how it is that we can have each child who is a more gifted child do much more work in explaining to other table mates, do much more work in explaining the work they do, do much more work in how it is that they got to 12 times 13 really quickly. So with our gifted children and those children who are more able, I believe that our educators are going to find ways through the implementation of Common Core to be teaching our children to do more work who are gifted.
Hydra?
Great, thank you. I think there's a variety of different things that we can do, and I think we've been looking a lot and implementing more blended learning opportunities for our kids who are more advanced or doing really well to find ways to enhance the curriculum that they're engaged in. I also think, and this is something that Emily's actually been pushing for, is a seventh period for all of our schools. And if we can afford a seventh period, that would actually enable many of our students to do extra time, pick some electives, be able to do the kinds of things that they want to do. And so I think that that's a really important piece. I also think expansion of our language programs. I think, you know, language programs, both of our kids went through Spanish immersion programs, but it exercises a different part of your brain. And so opportunities like that don't necessarily give you higher level math, but instead expands your horizons and enables you to exercise your brain in different ways, I think are really critical. And then leadership and mentorship roles for those that are in the classroom that are able to assist, I think are really great quality supports.
Great. We are getting short on time. We have time for one more question from each candidate. And what I think I'll do instead of asking several questions is ask one question and have you each give me your very quick perspective in 1 minute. And it's an issue that comes up time and time again and is very timely, which is the student assignment process. It is one of the most passionate issues, one of the things that fills my inbox with all the time, with problems, complaints, concerns, etc. We are in the process right now where people are taking tours of schools, and I would like to get your thoughts. What they tell me is it's a very confusing process. It's a very what they feel unpredictable process. There are perception problems that they have, and it's scary, I think is the word I hear a lot. Anybody agree with that? Yeah, when they went through it? Yeah, hi, yeah. Mm. So I'd like to get your thoughts, 1 minute each, on what you would do to address the student. Give me one thing that you would do to address the student assignment system. I'm going to start at that end, and we'll just come down this way. So Emily, if you could please go first.
So student assignments, we have a choice system. You're not assigned to the school that's closest to you. We have a choice system, and both my kids went to the Japanese bilingual bicultural program. We offer, you know, 6 different languages in the elementary grades, 3 at the high school grades. One thing that I would like to do is that the choice system disadvantages those families that can't get around to visit, that don't have flexibility in their schedules to visit schools. And we find that our African-American families are not participating in round one. So what that means is their choices are limited in round two and round three. And we would have more diverse schools if we could get our African-American, Latino, Pacific Islander families to participate in round one.
Yvonne.
So I'm a product of schools that were considered underperforming. I have families in schools right now that are considered underperforming. So when I hear this question,
I get the anxiety that active parents have around school choice. I also understand, I also feel a bit slighted because my kids are, my family is at schools that people don't want to send their kids to. I think the most important things we do is research to ensure that we have a better idea of how we can better accommodate families in a particular neighborhood. We don't actually know how many more additional seats we need if we were going to ensure that everyone that went to Claire Lilienthal got to go there. We don't know how to design a better algorithm so that predictability is ensured. We've seen models like in Boston where they have sort of a smaller algorithm and they've switched around some key things. I think there are ways that we can learn from that, but I ultimately think that making sure we have all the information on the table to better know how we can accommodate more families is going to be the first step.
Thank you. Jamie?
Thank you. I love this question. We get asked it a lot. It's something that affects me very intimately. My niece, my five-year-old niece, just started kindergarten. She's been in Spanish immersion her entire life, and so my sister tried to get her in Spanish immersion, got none of her choices, and she couldn't go to Spanish immersion. So I have many ideas. Just one that I'd like to share right now is I would love to showcase our schools much more than we currently do. I want to showcase to parents and families and bring parents and families by our own transportation to these schools and show them exactly what's going on at these schools. In addition to that, also bringing preferred programs and activities and reinstating more auto shops, wood shops, metal shops, and bringing them to the schools that parents aren't lining up to send their children to make them more palatable.
Mark.
So again, stealing some of the things I was going to say. So I was going to start right off with what Commissioner Morase, what Emily talked about, which really quickly is we know that a number of our families are not engaging in round one and round two. So as we talked about communications earlier this evening, we have to be finding ways to reach out to those families earlier and more often to get them engaged in our process. So since that's been taken, the second thing is, and some of us were talking about this before we started tonight, which is there is, and I believe, there is a huge hangover, I think, still from years gone by of those schools that aren't good, those schools that aren't as good as the others, those schools that, well, it's close to me, but I'm not sure it's good for my kids. There are so many great schools, and I think many of us believe that today. And somewhat like Jamie was saying, I think we need to sort of take the offensive and talk much more broadly and openly about the opportunities for great schools that do exist for our families. And it's not just the four or five that people still talk about today. We have many, 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 many schools, many, many families, many, many communities that are really positive, and I don't believe we're doing enough to talk about them.
Thank you. Hydra.
Yeah, thank you. So I agree. So those of you that have had positive experiences, I encourage you to talk to the parents that are looking to come in, because they do not talk to the parents that are actually in our schools. So I actually just started to organize a group in the city. It's an urban planning team. So it's the mayor's office of planning, it's housing, it's the office of economic and workforce development, and matching them up with our team in the school district. Because I want to be more proactive about these issues. And looking at what's happening in our city, especially if the 30,000 housing units actually go up, we're going to get a lot of squeeze from many of our schools. And that means more families are going to be applying to more of our schools, which means that there's going to be, that it would seem like there might be more people that would be unhappy about where they're getting placed because the communities are growing significantly. So there's a lot to be talked about around student assignment. We've been beating it to death for the last 50 years. But I want to start thinking about how we be proactive and really start thinking about the lay of the land and what San Francisco is going to be looking like over the next 10 years. Because we have to start thinking about keeping our surplus property and turning those into school sites and really accommodating all the families that will be coming back to our schools. Thank you.
Thank you. Dennis.
Well, I like the ideal behind student school assignment. However, many parents have shared with me their pain, the trouble, the hassle that they've had in driving their child from one side of the city to the other side in order to attend their school. And what I would do is I would work to make all schools great by implementing language immersion across the district. Studies have shown that when young children, kindergarten, first grade, when they learn a second language, it opens up the other side of their brain. So they're actually using both sides of their brain. And so if we can have all schools have language immersion, that way all our children will learn a lot more and become smarter at a younger age. And so this will help all our schools to become better. And so By doing that, we can actually implement neighborhood schools instead of having to worry about the student school assignment process. Thank you.
So unlike Jamie, I don't particularly like this question. because this is the one thing that it really presents a difficult situation for us here in San Francisco. My answer is really two things. We need to prioritize resources, and we have to work together. We have to remember that this school assignment system came as a result of litigation of parents and from parents, right? So we're not going to solve this without working with parents, without working with families. But at the end of the day, the way that we fix this scenario is to build quality schools in every neighborhood, in every community. That's a longer-term solution, but it's a real answer. It is the only way we're going to change this. If parents are comfortable with sending their children to schools in their communities, we eliminate a lot of the barriers, we eliminate a lot of anxiety because our schools are achieving well. So those are the things that we need to focus on. But we got to work together, school board members, parents, families, and make the changes in the school assignment system. But it's not an easy change.
Thank you, Trevor.
I definitely agree with everything everyone has said. This is one of those perennial problems I mentioned earlier that we see every year. And so one of the things that I want to do is work on the big things, work on the long-term things, especially funding, but also offer some immediate, something I've been talking a lot about, micro issues, little fixes that don't take an enormous amount to do. So bragging about our schools and making sure the process is clear is something I've been talking about from the beginning. I have this idea of, you know, there's fantasy baseball. Fantasy school assignment. We need to practice the lottery when you have a two-year-old. You should be practicing. If my kid was actually five this year, what would the process be like? Where am my kid likely to go? Because very often it's not about school quality, it's about predictability. And so something like that gimmicky actually, I think, would let parents have a practice round. I think there needs to be more translation. I think we need to radically rethink the way that the second round is done. You can't do it in person in the 21st century in San Francisco. You have to go online. I'd like to see more videos. Give a kid an iPhone, have them do a school video so that parents who can't make that school tour can still see that school and be comfortable putting that on their choice.
Thank you, Trevor. And we're going to end our evening together with final statements from the candidates. They will each have 30 seconds to leave us with their parting thoughts. And we will go from closest to me down that way. So you have 30 seconds. I'm going to let the... Are you ready, timekeeper? All righty.
Great timekeeper.
Yeah, so you're just... It's like starts with yellow. So just... You're just going to see red after 30 seconds. So, Trevor, 30 seconds.
People hear I teach 7th grade, their eyes go biggest plates, and they say, oh, my God. The secret is, actually, it's not altruistic. I love it. I love the work. I love the kids. And it's my passion. It's my vocation. I see the same thing with the school board thing. Everyone says running your own campaign, going to all these meetings, it must be so hard. But ultimately, it's altruistic. And it's also, it's not altruistic. It's selfish. I'm going to be a parent soon. I'm a San Franciscan. I want my school kids to thrive because even though I don't have kids in the schools right now, all of these kids are my kids because that's the perspective of a teacher. That's the perspective I want to bring. I would really appreciate your support. Thank you so much.
Great. Jamon.
Never be content with average because it's just as close to the bottom as it is to the top. To put it in a further perspective, a C is just as close to an F as it is to an A. If we want our children to be successful, if we want our children to thrive, quality education is the only way that that's going to happen. If you want somebody who's going to fight for all of our kids, our children that do very well, our children that need more assistance and more of a push to do very well, then you need to vote for Jamon Walton because that's what I will spend my time doing. I've done it with my own children, and I do it on a daily basis.
Thank you. Dennis?
Well, a couple of things that I didn't mention were that if I were elected to the board, I would implement meditation and tutorial time to help close the achievement gap. Meditation, or otherwise known as quiet time, at Burton and at Visitation Valley Middle School has really shown dramatic changes, has really shown improvements in that truancy has gone down, grades have gone way up. So those are things I would implement district-wide to really help close the achievement gap. And as everyone knows, San Francisco is a world-class city, so we deserve a world-class education, and I will bring that back to our school district. Thank you. Please vote for me.
Thank you. Hydra.
Thank you. So in the last 8 years that I've been on the board, we came from a very dysfunctional board, a city that didn't support our schools in a meaningful way. Business and funders were afraid to invest in our district, horrible state cuts, and while we hired two great superintendents that replaced an era of controversial leader. I've helped change all of these challenges while walking the walk and talking the talk. My kids went through our public schools. I went through our public schools. I know our schools are great schools because I sent them to our schools, and I also helped improve them. I hope you'll give me the opportunity to spend another 4 years with you because we've got some great challenges, and I'm ready to work harder and harder as I have in the past. Thank you.
Great. Mark.
Sure. Thank you again, everyone, for coming this evening. Go Giants. Again, as I said in the beginning, this is what I choose to do. This is about the legacy that we all together leave behind for our children, for all of our children here in San Francisco. Whether or not we're parents, whether or not we all have children in the room, this work is about the work for our San Francisco public education, our children who come to our schools every single day. I present to you myself, who someone who has experience with our San Francisco budgets with the school district, who has served on citywide governance and oversight bodies, and who has been on school communities. I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thank you, Jamie.
Well, thank you all for being here tonight. This is something I hope you see that I love, but I also have the skill. So I'm an educator running for the Board of Education. This is something that fulfills my life goals. I align it with my life, with my values, my morals. I spent a lot of time here on the Board of the Economic Opportunity Council. I really would appreciate your vote, but your vote will go to a good cause. I've never been late to my job in more than 10 years, and that's provable. I'm the first one in, the last one out. This is a passion and skill. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Stevan.
I'd like to thank all of you for sticking through this thing. One of my former students, his eyes are rolling, kind of going to sleep in the back, and I appreciate him. I'm actually the first graduate of Thurgood Marshall's history to run for office in San Francisco. That is not something that I want to see be the end of my story. I was told that no matter what I accomplished, it wouldn't matter unless somebody else was able to benefit from the work that I put forward. And when you look at this campaign, what we've been able to achieve as the youngest candidate in the race, has gotten all this incredible support. It is really what is possible for the students that are going to our schools right now. That's what I'm asking you to represent. That's why I would appreciate your vote. And thank you.
Great. Thank you, Sivan. Emily?
So everyone in this room gets most valuable player because you, as well as the sponsoring organizations, have helped to make our school district one of the top performing urban school districts in the state. We have National Blue Ribbon schools, we have California Distinguished Schools, and it's all the blood, sweat, and tears of the organizations and families who invest in our schools. I'm asking for your support for a second term. A couple of the detailed issues that I'd like to continue to work on are our foreign language programs. I think they're very attractive, keep families in the city, a seven-period day, and our Vision 2025 project.
Great. Thank you so much, candidates. I'm not going to end on a downer, so I'm not telling you the score. I want to thank our co-hosts, and I really want to thank what has been the best timekeeper in the history of debates. Thank you so much. Again, thank you, candidates, for coming here tonight with the Giants and sharing your priorities and your time. I know it's been a long road. You're almost there. This is a quality slate of candidates, and I'm going to cover whoever you vote for, so vote. I think that's the most important thing, and encourage everyone else to vote as well. Make sure your voice is heard, regardless of who you support. It's November 4th. It's coming up. I'll be covering it that night. And everyone have a great evening. Please drive home safely.
Thank you, Joe.